sure you can handle it?
I'm sure. The lie escaped his lips so fast he hadn't been completely certain that he'd spoken it aloud. Abraham opened his book once again and waved Joss casually away.
All right, then.
Joss still didn't feel very hungry. Chapter 13. Return to Death City. In comparison, Patty was much better at making light of the fact that they were going to examine a dead body than Morgan had been. Once they'd entered the cooler room and slipped on their gloves, Patty started humming a semi-happy tune. Then she rubbed some kind of balm on her upper lip, to which Joss raised a questioning eyebrow. She held out the small container.
Want some? It helps combat the stench. I honestly couldn't handle being in here without it. That and the humming. Humming relaxes me.
After a brief pause, Joss dabbed his fingers in the container and smeared the contents on his upper lip. It smelled like mint with a hint of rosemary. Unlike Morgan, Patty didn't even ask Joss to help in the examination. Not to touch, anyway. But she did roll the body's left wrist over so that Joss could see a strange tattoo. When he questioned its meaning, Patty said,
Vampires mark themselves with their name in the vampire language. We're really not sure why.
And you can read it? Patty nodded.
Much of it, yes. About 50 years ago, the society learned quite a bit from a vampire who'd seemingly defected to our side. He taught us quite a bit of the language, how vampires hunt, what to look for in identifying them.
Joss mulled this over for a second. He wasn't certain why he was at all surprised that the beasts had no sense of loyalty.
Why didn't he teach you the entire language?
Because vampires killed him before he could.
Patty clucked her tongue and shook her head.
A shame, really. He was quite useful to our cause. His efforts advanced the society by leaps and bounds. Funny, isn't it? It took a vampire to teach us how to really kill vampires.
On the right biceps, Joss spied another grouping of symbols, which looked similar to those on his wrist. Together, the symbols formed a square.
What's that, then? If this is his name, what is that?
Patty bent down, turning her head this way and that.
It says something about brothers in arms. Something about four sides joined. I can't really read the rest.
Patty's cell phone rang and she put it to her ear. After a series of yas and mm-hmms, she hung up and looked at Joss.
There's been another death. They think it's the same killer. This can't be our guy, Joss.
Joss cursed under his breath. He'd been so close. So close to being free of this task and moving on to finding Cecile's murderer. He couldn't be wrong about Boris. He just couldn't.
Who found the body? Are they sure it's a vampire-caused death?
As she returned her phone to her pocket, she said,
Morgan found it, and being that the head has been ripped clean off and very little blood remained on the scene, yeah, it's a vampire. But you can judge for yourself in a few minutes.
Joss raised an eyebrow at her.
I can?
They're bringing the body here.
He gulped, and his heart picked up its pace.
Now?
Patty offered a sympathetic smile.
What's the matter, kid? Nervous? You're already in a morgue with dead bodies. What difference will one more make?
She was right, of course. It didn't make a difference at all, not really. But the idea of seeing yet another corpse, especially a headless one, was tilting his world on its side. Patty grabbed him by the shoulders, steadying him, and held his gaze, wordlessly asking if he was okay. Joss nodded and steadied himself on the cold metal gurney that held Boris's body. The quiet keeper of the morgue opened the door to the cooler and barked,
Put it on the far gurney, the one that's missing a wheel.
He held the door open and Morgan backed into the room, carrying the broad end of a body bag. A moment later, Creighton entered, hefting the other end. They hoisted it onto the empty gurney with a sigh. Joss wondered exactly how much a dead body must weigh. He imagined it felt much heavier than a live one, but hoped he'd never had to find out. But he wagered he would. Creighton exited the room and returned with a small garbage bag. He dropped it on the gurney and met Joss's questioning eyes with a stern nod.
That's the head. Or rather, what was left of it.
If you want any more, go pick it off the sidewalk.
As Creighton stormed off, Patty looked at Morgan.
What's his problem? And why didn't the cleanup crew bring the body in?
Morgan leaned with both hands on the broken gurney. He sighed, letting his head hang for a while before answering.
Thus is the cleanup crew, Patty. Or rather, what's left of it. The others... We couldn't find enough pieces even to make out what was what or who was who. The Society said our cleanup crew failed to report after being called out to claim a suspected vampire victim in the meatpacking district. They sent us out to investigate. This is what we found. It's a message, loud and clear. The serial killer knows we're onto it, and it's not at all happy about it.
Joss swallowed hard. Their cleanup crew was dead. Not just dead, obliterated. And whoever, whatever, had done it was coming for them next. How could he have been wrong about Boris? He'd been so sure. Unless... He looked at the markings on Boris's biceps again. You guys, what if Boris wasn't working alone? Everything he said, everything the vampire bartender told me about him, said that he was our man. He was the killer. But what if he wasn't the only killer?
The room grew silent as Patty tried to grasp what he was saying. Her breath came out in small clouds.
Joss pointed at the tattoo. What if he had brothers? I mean, what if the tattoo was a literal meaning, not a figurative one? Brothers in arms. It could mean that he and his brothers stick together no matter what. And four sides joined? Sounds like four brothers to me.
Realization lit up Patty's eyes, but overshadowing it was a dark cloud of concern.
If you're right, do you know what that means, Joss?
Joss opened his mouth to tell her that yes, he did know, but before he could speak the words aloud, her voice echoed his thoughts into the cold room.
It means that our job, your job, just got four times more difficult.
He smiled a small smile, one that instantly drew a questioning glance from Patty.
No, it doesn't. It's only three times as hard. I've already killed one of them.
Patty chuckled and ruffled his hair.
Always the optimist, kid. You might just make it in the Society yet.
His chest felt warm and light, and only a little bit like his heart was glowing.
So what now?
Now?
Patty sighed.
You find M. If she really is the oldest vampire in existence, she'll have something to say about a team of vampires running rampant. Just be careful.
Joss fought a yawn. It had already been a long day. The last thing he wanted was to seek out the world's oldest vampire when he was exhausted from killing her kind. But he had no choice. Duty called. Chapter 14. Perhaps nothing at all. Joss jerked awake on the subway train and sat up, wiping the drool from the corner of his mouth. He was surprised that the sudden movement hadn't sliced through his neck with pain, but then his bite seemed to be healing at a ridiculously fast rate. In fact, he doubted that there would be any remnants of it left by the next morning. He hadn't meant to doze off, and if Uncle Abraham found out that Joss had fallen asleep, even for a moment, while on duty, he might just kill him. But Joss hadn't been sleeping well, and could see no time in the future when he'd rest well at all. A killer was still on the loose, maybe several killers. The nightmare he'd had this time, something to do with fire and blood, left him, but not as quickly as he hoped. One image, Cecile's mouth, so large and strange and frightening, stuck with him the longest. Running a shaking hand over the back of his neck, Joss relaxed into his seat, cursing himself for having dozed off in public when killers were still on a rampage in the city.
Everyone has bad dreams, Joss.
He jolted slightly at the sound of Dorian's voice. What was he doing here, in New York, and acting like Joss shouldn't be surprised to see him at all? Joss looked over, not speaking for a moment, and wondered what the man who'd mysteriously brought his stake to him against the Society's wishes could possibly want from him. He felt on the defensive until he looked into Dorian's eyes. Something about Dorian's expression told Joss that this man truly understood the torment that nightmares could bring. He cleared his throat, not wanting to talk about his dreams, and said, "I guess so." Dorian didn't move, but instead sat very quietly, as if waiting for Joss to speak again. Joss shifted in his seat, wondering what Dorian was doing here, and how they just happened to end up sitting next to each other on the train. Dorian took a breath, let it out slowly, and said,
"Like you, Joss, I frequently have terrible nightmares."
Every muscle in Joss's body tensed then. He had no idea how Dorian could know about Cecile. Did he? No, of course not. Dorian couldn't peer into his soul, couldn't pierce his dreams and divulge the most private of details. But he had been sitting beside Joss as he'd dreamed. Maybe Joss had moved about. Maybe he'd talked in his sleep. It made sense. It also embarrassed him terribly. His nightmares were a secret, one between him and his dead sister. But then, he suspected, Dorian's nightmares were probably pretty secret too, judging by his hushed tone and the haunted look in his eyes. Joss relaxed his muscles some and leaned closer, dropping his voice to a conspiring whisper.
"What do you dream about, Dorian?"
"I dream about a boy. He murders me every time I go to sleep."
He sat very still for a moment, and when he moved at last, it was to wipe the smallest of tears from his right eye.
"It's frightening, really, because I don't know what the dreams mean exactly, and I'm not used to not knowing what my dreams mean."
The train came to a stop and the doors opened, letting an old man and a businesswoman on board. The old man shuffled by Joss and Dorian, but the woman stayed near the door, holding on to the bar above. Once the car began to move again, Joss turned back to Dorian.
"Why do you think dreams mean anything? I mean, dreams are just your subconscious going on vacation. Meaningless images flashing through your brain while you're asleep. They're just dreams, right?"
At this, Dorian straightened, as if the subject of dreams were a passionate cause of his.
"Dreams, my young friend, particularly to someone like me and someone like you, believe it or not, mean absolutely everything."
Before the polite filter between his brain and his mouth could activate, Joss said,
"Well, that sounds strangely ominous. What do you mean exactly?"
As the train came to a stop, Dorian stood, his lips curled in a small smile.
"We're just more alike than I think you realize, Joss."
Joss didn't like that. Didn't like the strange comparison between them when Dorian didn't really know him at all. He pursed his lips in anger. "How did you come to acquire my stake, Dorian? And why did you give it to me without the society's permission?" Dorian looked him over for a moment, like he'd been expecting Joss's anger. As he responded, he moved his eyes to the doors, answering without looking back at Joss.
"I'll explain that soon enough. But first, I think you should enjoy some of the nightlife my fair city has to offer. It would be far more advantageous than you visiting V-Bar, especially considering the outrage you've created there. Might I suggest Element, or perhaps the Vault? Both can be found in one building on East Houston and Essex Street."
As the doors swished open, people poured out onto the platform. In a blink, Dorian was gone. Joss sat up in his seat, his eyes heavy with sleep. He looked around the car, but was surprised to find he had it all to himself. Had the entire conversation he'd just had been a dream? Had Dorian really been here, or were his restless nights finally catching up with him? His memory burned with the names of the nightclubs that Dorian had mentioned, but he didn't trust himself to recall them once he'd returned to base, so he withdrew a marker from his backpack and scribbled on his palm, "Element, The Vault, East Houston and Essex Street." After a brief pause, he wrote, "Why would he suggest this?" As Joss settled back into his seat, the buzz of curiosity filled him. Dorian had an intriguing way of popping into his world and back out again, of giving him things that he needed, like a stake, like a club name, and he never seemed to ask any questions. He simply knew things, like how Joss had been experiencing a nightmare. Joss wasn't an idiot. He realized that Dorian had some very vampire-like traits. But Dorian wasn't a vampire. Joss got the feeling that Dorian was something more, something spectacular. He wasn't afraid of Dorian, and strangely, he almost trusted him. But he had to remind himself that vampires could do some strange, otherworldly things, like control your thoughts, your actions, your memories, your feelings. They could create within you the desire for friendship, and only truth could rip that haze to shreds. Dorian was something other than human, certainly, but he was not Joss's friend. As the train came to a stop, Joss stood, slipping the strap of his backpack over his right shoulder. He stepped off the car and navigated his way to the surface, slipping a pair of sunglasses on over his eyes to shade his vision from the afternoon glare. He moved down the street with a confident step, his peripheral vision always on the lookout for danger. The sounds of the city played out in his ears, and Joss thought, not for the first time since he'd been here, that he could absolutely call Manhattan home. It was a busy place, a friendly place, with lots to see and do. The buildings were tall and interesting to look at, the people wearing kind smiles. In fact, if it weren't for the rampant vampire infestation, Joss was fairly certain he could be happy living in this city. But as they say, location is everything, and the last location a slayer wants is living among the very vampires he's trying to extinguish. Dorian had said that Joss had created outrage at V-Bar. What was he talking about? Had Otis caused a ruckus over him being there? And if so, what was he supposed to do? Just give up his mission because his presence had ruffled some feathers? No, that would be cowardly. And slayers didn't cower in fear in the face of danger. Slayers faced it head on. It was this thought that carried him down the street and eventually around the corner to V-Bar. He hadn't been headed there at first. In fact, he'd been planning on checking out Obscura one more time and questioning the shopkeeper there. But something inside of him said to go back to V-Bar, and that maybe he'd find M there. As he turned the corner, he was met by a large crowd standing outside its blue doors. The sight of it made his steps slow, but after a moment, he moved forward again into the crowd.
"Please, please, my brethren, if you'll all just calm down for a moment so that I may speak."
The man standing on the steps of V-Bar was the vampire who'd been with Otis the other day, the owner of the establishment, Enrico. Joss slipped behind a tall vampire in the back so that he could hear well enough without being seen. Only Enrico didn't speak. Not out loud, anyway. Joss couldn't hear the vampire's telepathic words, not the way he'd been able to hear the bartender's thoughts before, and he wasn't entirely certain why he could hear one but not the other. And he absolutely didn't want to ask any of his team members. What if it meant that something was wrong with him? He couldn't bear the idea of driving a wedge between himself and his Slayer family. The crowd erupted in applause then, as if whatever it was that Enrico had thought to them had pleased them very much, and mutters raced through the group, mutters that spoke of vengeance and blood. Joss shrank inside himself. If they noticed him, he was as good as dead.
"So please, ladies and gentlemen, allow your elders to handle this horrific situation. We promise to do so swiftly and with the greatest of pleasures."
Dorian was right. Joss shouldn't have come here. He turned and slowly made his way back through the crowd. Just as he reached its edge, a hand fell on his arm, grasping it tightly. Joss gasped and turned his head to see Steven, the bartender, gripping him like a madman. Joss's heart beat harder, faster. All it would take was a word from Steven and the crowd would devour him, quite literally. Steven nodded slowly and released him.
"Did you keep your word, boy? Did he suffer?"
Joss dropped his gaze for a moment to the concrete beneath his feet. The concern and regret in the bartender's eyes was oddly touching, and Joss hated being moved by the mixture of emotions. Vampires weren't supposed to have emotions. They were monsters. Cruel, heartless, uncaring monsters, weren't they?
"I was as quick as I could be."
Steven pinched the bridge of his nose, willing tears away, and then looked back at Joss.
"Be quicker now. Get away from here. Don't return. They're out for your blood.
Joss nodded and moved away from the crowd. He didn't turn back to look at Boris's friend, but thought two words, hoping that Stephen would hear it. Thank you. By the time Joss reached the brownstone, his stomach was rumbling from a long day without much to eat. He'd made absolutely certain that he hadn't been followed back, but just in case he'd missed something, Joss passed their base of operations and paused at the corner, turning back casually to see if anyone unusual had paused as well. But no one on the street seemed even vaguely aware of him, or even mildly interested in where he might be headed. Satisfied, Joss hurried up the steps of the brownstone and stepped inside. Patty was standing guard in the foyer, looking bored as ever to be stuck with that detail. He flashed her a warm smile, but was met with a sad grimace. He liked Patty. She was like a tough older sister to him. Hey, Patty, slow day? Groaning, she sagged her shoulders a bit.
The slowest. But Morgan has door detail tomorrow, so at least I can get out of the house then. Turn up anything worth wondering about today, kid?
Joss shrugged. It's probably nothing, but I think I need to talk to my uncle about it. Where is he anyway?
Out for the evening. Anything I can help with?
Joss bit the inside of his cheek. He liked Patty, but she wasn't too keen on the idea of him taking risks. He needed someone who was. Maybe. Where's Morgan anyway?
In the library, looking at some old maps or something.
Folding her arms in front of her chest, she tilted her head while looking at Joss, her tone lifting slightly in concern.
Everything okay, kiddo? You have big dark circles under your eyes, like you haven't been sleeping very well.
I haven't, but I'm fine. He moved past her into the main hall then and made an immediate right, where he pushed open the double doors to the library. Morgan was standing over the desk at the center of the room, poring over the large, haphazard pile of papers. He leaned on the desk with one palm, but his other hand was scratching furiously at his forehead. Joss cleared his throat, and Morgan looked up at him, surprised.
Sorry, kid. Didn't hear you come in. What's up?
Joss managed a shrug.
Long day.
Morgan sighed, his eyes scanning the papers on the table once again.
Tell me about it.
Joss nodded toward the papers. What's all this about? More intel? Morgan sighed.
Kind of. Your uncle asked me to find more information on the vampires we're searching for. He says there has to be more to go on in our files, as everyone seems to be having trouble locating them. So, of course, I must have missed something. I had a friend in the Society archives fax several things over, and I've been linking that information all day with various articles and whatnot I found online and printed out, and now I have a big messy pile to contend with, not to mention your uncle's complaints.
It was strangely nice to know that Joss wasn't the only one who felt pressure from Abraham. Still, Morgan's pursed lips and that deep crease in his forehead had Joss mildly concerned about what that stress might do to his health.
I might have something.
Joss felt the corner of his mouth twitch slightly. He had no idea how to tell Morgan that his latest lead had come from Dorian, and that Dorian might just be some kind of otherworldly creature. He wondered if Morgan would think him completely crazy if he told Morgan where his something was coming from. A dream? A vision? Something else altogether? He still had no idea. Maybe he was going crazy. Morgan looked mildly hopeful, or maybe he was just happy to have something other than a pile of papers to occupy his time.
What's that, little brother?
Joss bit the inside of his cheek in hesitation before speaking. The little voice inside his brain begged him not to, but before it could start to make any more sense than it already did, Joss blurted out, "A lead. Maybe. I don't know exactly. Do you know anything about Element, or a club called The Vault?" A small crease formed on Morgan's forehead. He looked up briefly, as if perhaps the answers were in the ceiling tiles above. Not finding them there, he looked back at Joss and shrugged.
Maybe. Why?
Because I heard about it today, and I think we should check it out.
Heard about it. Not dreamed about it. And certainly not hallucinated it.
Morgan nodded.
Abraham would want a solid reason to investigate, you know.
He was saying no already, Before Joss had even had a chance to set foot inside the place to see whether or not Dorian's suggestion had been a dream or something else entirely. My gut says we should do it anyway, Morgan. After regarding Joss for a minute, with a look that said he wanted to help, Morgan flipped through the papers sprawled across the desk. Near the bottom of the stack on the upper left corner, Morgan produced a pink sheet of paper, covered with nearly unreadable handwritten notes. He slapped it down on top of the stack in front of Joss in a triumphant gesture, pointing to a paragraph on the center of the page that had the word element scribbled across the top.
There. That place used to be owned by a vampire named Ignatius, but it changed ownership to a human about 5 years ago. Since then, we've lost track.
Why do you have this? Morgan looked exhausted, and very much like he was fighting a tired yawn.
I told you. Abraham wanted more information, so I went back 100 years. Do you have any idea how much crap is in the New York files for the last 100 years? But this place caught my eye, so I kept it. Just in case it led to something. Besides, it's got everything a vamp could want. Secluded areas, darkness. What you thinking, kid?
Joss looked from the scribbled notes to Morgan and dared to say aloud his greatest hopes. I'm thinking we should hit the club tonight, Morgan. And I'm thinking there's no reason to tell my uncle about it until after we gather the information I think is waiting for us inside that club. Morgan frowned, throwing a glance behind Joss at the door, likely checking to see if anyone were in the hall to overhear their little chat. Seemingly satisfied, he moved his eyes back to Joss.
Of course. Well, you certainly could pass as old enough to get into a club. Your uncle would literally kill me for sneaking you into one, no matter what the reason.
Joss searched his mind for some excuse, some shred of semi-convincing reason that he could offer Morgan to get him to escort Joss into the club, but his mind came up blank. Morgan snapped his fingers loudly, a grin on his face.
Got it!
The enthusiasm in his voice caused Joss to raise an eyebrow in suspicion.
Got what?
Morgan walked around the desk and gripped Joss's shoulders, a sparkle in his eyes.
Go get dressed. We're going clubbing, little brother.
Chapter 15. Cage. Joss walked alongside Morgan after they'd exited the subway station, nervously adjusting his red tie. It was hanging loose from his neck, the bottom tucked into his gray pinstriped vest, which was embroidered with bold black swirls that matched his black shirt. His pants were gray and black and plaid, and topping off the ensemble were black Converse tennis shoes. Joss had argued with Patty over her fashion choices for the evening. After all, who wore Converse with a tie? But in the end, he couldn't deny that he looked a little punk, pretty cool, and older than he actually was, which was certainly key to getting inside a nightclub when you had no legal business being there. As he walked, his shoulders straightened, and a small smile formed on his lips. For once, despite the fact that he was technically on the hunt for vampire kind, he was honestly feeling confident, and his smile was sincere. Beside him, Morgan was dressed in short black leather boots, black pants, crisp black shirt unbuttoned at the neck, and a matching fedora. Morgan was smiling too. The tension that had infected the air between him and the other slayers had melted away for the evening, and he and Morgan were just having a good time. For the first time, it felt like Joss had a big brother. Not a fellow slayer, not a mentor, just a brother. One he could hang out with and just enjoy himself. They were going out on the town. They were headed out to a premier nightclub in New York City. The very idea of that, while slightly terrifying to a reserved 15-year-old, was immensely appealing. A group of girls giggled past them and hurried across the street to a building that looked a bit like an old bank. It was warmly lit, and outside was a line of people waiting to go in. Morgan paused at the corner. Joss paused beside him, squinting at Creighton's old driver's license. No one was stupid enough to believe that the 15-year-old guy holding the license was the 21-year-old in the picture. They didn't look anything alike. Joss shook his head.
There's no way I'm getting in there.
Morgan sighed.
You are too. You look older than you are, can carry yourself confidently, and the picture's kind of blurry.
You wanted to know more about blending in an urban environment? This is part of that. But Morgan... Morgan looked like he was losing his patience. Look, kid, I have a contact at the door anyway, so getting into Element shouldn't be much of a problem. But getting downstairs into the vault might be another issue. Let me do the talking, and if someone presses the issue of how old you are, just tell them you're a guest of Dorian. Joss's heart seized in his chest. Morgan couldn't be talking about the same Dorian who had gifted Joss with a stake, could he? He must have widened his eyes a bit, because Morgan looked at him and raised an eyebrow. Everything okay, kid? Yeah, just... Joss blinked, taking slow, deep breaths, trying to calm his heart rate. Who's Dorian, anyway? A flash of suspicion crossed Morgan's eyes then.
The guy who owns the club, but not many know it. My buddy at the door said that if we so much as utter Dorian's name, it'll make people treat us right.
Joss nodded, his eyes on the nightclub across the street. He tried to appear calm, but had a feeling his acting abilities were off tonight. The line at the door was growing. In a moment, Morgan's hand was on his shoulder.
So, exactly how do you know Dorian, little brother?
The inside of Joss's chest felt like it burst into flames, flashing quickly with immense heat before turning to ashes and blowing away inside of him. He felt hollowed out. He felt empty. Slowly, so slowly that it seemed like time was barely clicking along at all, he turned his head and met Morgan's eyes. Morgan shrugged.
I could see it written on your face the moment I said his name. So how do you know him?
The lie formed on Joss's tongue, but blew away like the ashes inside of him, leaving only truth behind. He gave me my stake. My great-great-great-grandfather's stake. Morgan eyed him momentarily before speaking.
I wondered where you got it.
Joss's eyes went wide. You knew? Morgan nodded. Joss felt his insides start to burn again. The heat permeated his flesh, warming his cheeks. Do you know Dorian? Morgan shook his head, adjusting his fedora slightly with one hand.
No, kid. Never met the guy. And I'm highly suspicious as to why he'd give you a stake. But I knew somebody had, and I knew that it was through no doing of the society. A tip, though. Get a holster. You don't need to carry that case around in a bulky backpack. Most of that stuff you'll hardly ever use.
A memory flashed through Joss's mind, the angry words of a vampire he'd once been friends with. Vlad had tossed Joss's container of holy water on the ground and given him a lesson that came out sounding like a warning. Just so you know, the cross won't work either. They're myths, kind of like how all vampires are evil. Joss chewed the inside of his cheek momentarily, mulling over the way that vampires keep managing to get close to him. He debated how Dorian kept seeping into his life and wondered for a moment what this would mean for his future as a slayer. With a hopeful tone, he muttered, "So, you're not going to tell my uncle that I carry a stake?"
Tell him what? I'd rather you were armed.
Morgan winked then and crossed the street. After a single heartbeat, Joss followed. As they approached the line, Morgan led Joss right up to the front, much to the irritation of those who were already waiting in line. Morgan nodded to the doorman, who nodded back, ushering him and Joss inside. It was a strange thing, walking into a club when you were very underage and clearly didn't belong. Joss had expected the crowd, the music, the line at the bar, but he hadn't expected a few of the leering glances from some of the women and some of the men. Morgan led him to the bar, where he grabbed a glass of some gold-looking liquid without ice, and Joss a glass of Mountain Dew with ice. They found an unoccupied bench and sat down, Morgan swirling his drink around in the glass before taking a healthy sip. Just as Joss was beginning to wonder what they were waiting for, Morgan leaned over and spoke as quietly as he could to be heard over the music.
See that guy at the bar? The one in the loose white shirt, tight leather pants, and snakeskin boots?
Scanning the bar, Joss spotted the guy Morgan was talking about. His hair was long, semi-curly, and dirty blonde, his eyes such a crystalline blue that they could even be seen from this distance. And though he was obviously there alone, he seemed at complete ease with himself, as if frequenting clubs alone were a regular thing for him. It was, Joss assumed, largely because this man was a hunter, and nightclubs were clearly his hunting grounds. He wasn't a man at all, and Joss couldn't really identify his reasons for knowing this beyond pure instinct, but a vampire. Joss casually moved his gaze away and sipped his Mountain Dew before replying to Morgan. What about him? Morgan sipped his drink again, and Joss wondered if he were doing so to appear casual or if he really needed a drink at that moment.
He's not alone. Look near the door.
Standing by the door was a woman, tall and lean. Her hair was black and sleek, hanging down to her waist. She was in a sparkly blue dress that fit her like it was two sizes too small, and heels so high that Joss wondered if they inhibited her movement at all. He hoped so, in fact, largely because Morgan was right. Two vampires were inside Element, and Joss wasn't exactly sure what he and Morgan were going to do about it. He sipped his Mountain Dew again, mulling over just that, and by the time he turned his attention back to Morgan, Morgan had stood and drained his glass dry.
Stay with him, kid. Watch him. Get close, but not too close. And if you need me, you call, okay? I'll come running.
Joss raised his eyebrows in surprise. Where are you going? A smile settled on Morgan's lips as he nodded to the female vampire by the door.
With her.
Joss furrowed his brow, worried that perhaps she was using some kind of mind control on his friend. You do recall that she's a monster, right? And that we kill her kind, with good reason? As if Joss had slapped him, Morgan shot him a look.
If either of us has a chance of getting close to that thing and finding out what it knows, it's me.
He took this in for a moment, realizing quickly that he had insulted Morgan after Morgan had actually eased the tension between them for the time being. He was just worried, that's all. Worried that he couldn't trust Morgan's sensibilities. Worried that yet another vampire would dupe him and he'd be left to pick up the shattered pieces of his existence once more. But he reminded himself, Morgan was an old pro. Morgan knew how to tail vampires and how to get information from them without whipping out his stake and torturing it out of them. He looked at Morgan then and lowered his head a bit in shame.
Sorry, Morgan, I get the feeling you don't have many friends, little brother. But I want you to know that I am your friend, and I will never betray you. Not like Cyrus, okay?
Morgan held his gaze for a moment, letting his words sink in. They did. Deeply.
Okay, Morgan. Hey, about that private job. If you ever want to talk about it...
I don't. Joss felt his jaw twitch slightly. Morgan nodded slowly.
Too soon.
You could say that. As Joss swallowed hard, Morgan cracked a sincere smile.
We're brothers, right?
Joss nodded. They were brothers. Morgan was an important part of Joss's extended Slayer family. If he could trust anyone, he could trust a fellow Slayer.
Morgan?
Morgan tilted his head curiously at Joss's inflection. Yeah? Holy water is useless against vampires, okay? Crosses too. Just trust me on this, all right? Morgan seemed to mull this bit of information over for a moment. Joss could tell he desperately wanted to ask how Joss had come by this pertinent information, but in the end, he decided not to pry. He nodded slowly and scratched his chin.
Good to know. Thanks, kid.
Joss wanted to tell him where that knowledge had come from, that it was from the mouth of a vampire he'd once called friend, but he couldn't. It was too embarrassing, having been duped twice by an undead creature of the night. He wanted Morgan to like him, respect him, admire him. How would Morgan ever do that if he knew that Joss was a Slayer who was incapable of recognizing his natural enemy? No. There was no way he could share the details of his encounter with Vlad with Morgan. Not now. Maybe not ever. The female vampire turned and exited the door. Morgan tensed.
I have to tail her. You stay on him. Where he goes, you go. If you overhear anything about those vampire brothers, listen in, then hightail it back to base. You got it?
But he didn't stick around for Joss's answer. Before Joss knew it, Morgan had slipped out into the night, leaving him alone in a nightclub in New York City. Unsettled, Joss took a drink of his soda and set the glass down on the small table to his right before turning his attention back to the vampire at the bar. Except the vampire wasn't there anymore. Joss looked quickly around the club, but couldn't locate his mark anywhere. Frowning, he chastised himself for having lost the beast. But he wasn't about to go home empty-handed. The vampire hadn't gone out the door, so he had to be in here somewhere. Joss stood up, grabbed his glass, and headed for the stairs that led to the vault. A large, meaty hand planted at the center of his chest, and the owner of that hand, who stood over 1,000,000 feet tall and had shoulders the width of the Catskill Mountains, glared down at him with angry, slanted eyes.
Where you think you're going, son? In fact, how'd you get in here in the first place?
Joss swallowed hard, a small squeak preceding his reply.
Dorian?
Dorian said I could be here. The man didn't remove his hand, but with his free hand, withdrew his cell phone from his inside jacket pocket and flipped it open, pressing a button for a number on speed dial. His eyes stayed on Joss the entire time.
Yes, sir. It seems you have an underage guest in Element trying to head down to the vault. He says he's a friend of yours. His name is...
Joss swallowed again. His throat was beginning to feel like someone had rubbed it over with a fine-grained sandpaper. When he spoke, his words came out in the form of a question, even though he hadn't intended them to.
Joss?
The big man nodded.
He says his name is Joss, sir.
The pause between sentences must have only lasted a few seconds, but to Joss, they dragged on an eternity in length. And the entire time, his heart beat in slow motion. Loud, pounding beats thumping in his ears slowly, solidly. When the man spoke again, Joss had to resist the urge to bolt.
I see.
Suddenly, the meaty hand released Joss's chest, and the man's demeanor changed. He flicked his gaze around the room nervously.
Oh, I'm so sorry, sir. I didn't realize. Of course. Anything he wants on the house. Yes, I apologize. I will. Right away, sir. Have a nice trip.
He closed the phone, returning it to his pocket then, and when he spoke to Joss, his voice was gentle and kind.
I'm so sorry, Mr. McMillan. I didn't realize you were in Dorian's inner circle. You have to understand my position. Young kid, nightclub full of... Well, I'm so sorry. Anyway, whatever you want, sir, I'll get it for you. On the house, of course. Courtesy of Dorian.
Joss could feel his eyebrows threatening to go up in surprise, but he smiled politely and nodded, concealing his utter shock.
Thank you. No hard feelings. Hey, have you seen a blonde guy in black leather pants and snakeskin boots around?
An eager smile appeared on his face.
Do you mean Cage? He just went downstairs. Do you want me to find him for you?
Joss shook his head. The last thing he wanted was a vampire to be fully aware that a slayer was looking for him.
No, I'll go look for him. Thanks anyway, though.
As he descended the stairs, Joss's entire being was enveloped by music with a heavy bass line.
This is the end of disc number 3. Please insert disc number 4. This is disc number 4.
Joss shook his head. The last thing he wanted was a vampire to be fully aware that a slayer was looking for him.
No, I'll go look for him. Thanks anyway, though.
As he descended the stairs, Joss's entire being was enveloped by music with a heavy bass line. It thumped in his chest, down his legs, into the marrow of his bones. The lights were dim as dim could be, and bodies filled every available inch of space. But something about the scene wasn't suffocating or intimidating at all. It was invigorating, energizing, and Joss liked the way that it felt. As he moved through the crowd, people danced around him. Some even tried to dance with him. Joss smiled politely and kept moving, his eyes sweeping the large space for any sign of Cage. When he was just about to give up, he spotted the vampire in question talking to a girl in her mid-20s who looked like she was falling over herself just to get closer to Cage. Sometimes, Joss thought, he understood human girls as much as he understood vampires, meaning not at all. He watched the vampire as casually as he could manage, and eventually, after an hour or so, Cage grabbed the girl he'd been talking to by the wrist and tugged her toward the back of the club. The look on her face was one of blank obedience. She didn't seem intoxicated or anything, just like she was floating in some haze, a haze likely put there by a vampire. A cold shiver tickled its way up Joss's spine. He followed as discreetly as possible, darting between small groups of dancers, and eventually came to a door that was on its way to being closed. Pulling the door open, Joss peered up the dark stairs, running a hesitant hand over the back of his neck. Should he follow? He was just supposed to be gathering information. What if he was walking into some kind of trap? Or worse, what if he didn't go up those stairs and an innocent girl was murdered because he didn't want to take a risk? Joss stepped through the door and it swung closed behind him, sealing most of the music inside the club, leaving him with the faint sounds of bass still beating in his chest. As he moved up the stairs, he slid his back silently along the wall, traveling up several flights, doing what he could to remain in the shadows. At the top of the stairs was another door, and he placed his ear against it to listen. Nothing. Nothing but the sounds of the night. He took a deep breath, withdrew the stake from his waistband, and pushed the steel door open a crack. He could only see a small portion of the roof from where he was standing, but he could see the vampire perfectly. Cage was standing out on the roof, the unwitting, likely mind-controlled girl in his arms. He smiled down at her, his fangs shining in the low light.
Oh, my pretty little one. You should consider yourself special, my pet. It's not often in recent weeks that I feed in private. I like the thrill of killing you cattle in front of your own kind. It's rather addictive, that sensation. Every heart around me begins to race, filling my ears with a most delicious rhythm. It's the sweetest music I've ever heard. But I'm happy to forgo that song tonight. Your AB negative has me salivating, and I don't want to share you, not even with my brothers.
An emotion crossed his face then. Pain. Intense pain and loss. Cage was grieving for his brother Boris. But as quickly as that pain had surfaced, it disappeared again.
Not even in Central Park. Oh, you'd like it there. Or at least I would. It's the only place where we hunt together, you see. I prefer to hunt as a pack. But Boris, well, he's always insisted that a hunt should be one-on-one. That it makes the moment more intimate. Of course, Boris is gone now. But I suspect you'd have enjoyed his company in Central Park. You could run free until he pounced and drank your every drop. But not tonight. Tonight you're mine, here and now. Shall we begin?
Joss's stomach turned, then hardened with disgust. His fingers tightened around his stake and he pushed gently against the door, opening it farther. He had to get onto the roof, get as close as he could to the beast before it noticed him and take it down. And standing here eavesdropping wasn't going to accomplish any of that. Cage paused momentarily, a smirk curling on his lips.
Of course, it would be very rude of us not to greet our guest. But then, he's being a bit rude too by lurking in the stairwell, isn't he?
Joss grimaced and flung the door open. The steel hit the concrete wall with a loud bang. Cage turned a surprised smile to him, not surprised because of his presence, but perhaps because he'd been expecting someone else.
Well, well, the Slayers are recruiting younger and younger every year, aren't they? Must be getting desperate. Not that I can blame them.
Joss didn't say anything. Something his encounter with Vlad had taught him was that emotional distance from your mark makes it much easier to take their life. Hesitation is the most dangerous thing that can happen to a Slayer in confrontation, and interacting with the monsters might bring about empathy, which absolutely contributes to hesitancy. Besides that, Joss was human. That put him a few notches above vampire in his book. He'd save his conversation for someone who wasn't murdering innocents for sport. When Joss didn't reply, Cage said,
You've come to kill me, I assume. Mind if I finish my meal first? Even prisoners on death row are given a final meal.
His tone dripped with sarcasm, and it was all Joss could do to keep from losing his cool. Joss scanned the roof, and apart from leaping off the edge, there didn't seem to be an easy manner of escape. Of course, if Boris had taught him anything, it was that vampires could fly. Reaching to his left, he closed the steel door behind him, its metal sound clanging into the air again. He wasn't going to engage the beast. Talking wouldn't help the situation. With his hand gripping so tightly around his stake that his knuckles appeared bleached, he lowered his center of gravity, eyes locked on the vampire, ready to make his move. Cage shrugged and opened his mouth, lowering it onto the girl's neck. But before he could bite, Joss broke into a run. In an instant, Cage dropped the girl to the ground, ready for the Slayer's attack. But Joss had other plans. He threw his stake as hard as he could, and it whipped through the air like a wooden missile, aimed straight for Cage's heart. At the last minute, Cage pulled back. The stake struck him in the chest, but bounced uselessly off, its energy spent on its flight. Cage grinned at Joss and moved toward him. Joss frowned at the ineffectiveness of his efforts, but noted that Cage was moving only as fast as a human might move, which made him wonder if vampires each had different skills, and if maybe one of his was not speed. If his theory was true, then that would mean that vampires weren't insurmountable foes at all. It just meant that they each could do different things that he had to learn to work around. The thought comforted him some, but then Cage was on him, ready for a fight. He grabbed a handful of Joss's shirt, pulling Joss closer, and for a moment, Joss forgot that his opponent was supernatural at all. He balled up his fist and smashed it into Cage's nose. Blood splattered across Cage's face and Joss's fist in an explosion of anguished cries. When Cage looked at Joss, his eyes were tearing, his fangs fully visible, but this time, not in hunger for the girl's blood. Joss moved fast, grabbing Cage by the wrist, hoping to surprise him. He flipped the vampire over, slamming him on the tar, scaring himself that he was even capable of such a physical act. Out of the corner of Joss's eye, he noticed a tattoo on Cage's arm. It was the same tattoo that had been on Boris's arm, brothers in arms. Joss's theory had been correct. Boris had had a brother, three of them, in fact. And Cage was one of them. The moment Cage hit the ground on his back, Joss was on him, his stake in his hand, the tip pressed firmly against Cage's chest. Joss looked at the girl, who had only just begun to stand back up again, completely dazed by what she had witnessed. Go! Get out of here! The girl shook her head, but not in refusal. It was as if she were fighting to wake from a dream. She scrambled to her feet, her chest heaving in panic, and bolted for the door. After struggling with it for a moment, she pulled the door open and disappeared inside. Joss pressed the tip of his stake harder into Cage's chest, until the skin broke and crimson bubbled up from within. He leaned closer to the monster's face, as close as he could without touching. Now, tell me where your brothers are. Inside Joss's pocket, his cell phone buzzed to life. Not now, cat, he thought. Threaten my life later, but not now. Cage's eyes were furious slits, but behind that fury lurked an emotion Joss was certain the creature hadn't experienced much of in its lifetime. Fear. But outweighing that fear was its immense and utter hatred of Joss. It spit in Joss's face and growled. Go to hell, Slayer boy!
Bad boys go to hell, especially when they send their sisters there.
Cecile's words echoed in Joss's brain then, just a fleeting, haunting whisper that Joss recognized instantly from a nightmare, but enough to loosen Joss's grip on his stake. Spotting his opponent's moment of distracted weakness, Cage threw a punch, smashing his fist into Joss's nose. Joss's head snapped back, pain exploding through his skull. Then Cage threw Joss off of him, sending Joss flying several yards across the rooftop. When Joss hit the tar, pain racked his body. Joss was certain he'd broken a bone or two, or maybe all of them. But as he struggled to stand, only his muscles screamed out, and his nose, which hurt more than he ever thought it could. Before he could fully recover, Cage slammed into his side, knocking him into the wall. The wind left Joss's lungs, his chest seizing. For a moment, Joss had a feeling that these might be his last memories, that he might actually die on this roof. Cage gripped a handful of his hair and yanked his head to the side, hissing into his ear,
"You've stolen my meal, Slayer boy. So now I'm afraid you're going to have to replace it."
Panic filled every cell in Joss's body. His heart raced until it was pounding in his ears. He pressed against Cage, fighting to get free, but the vampire wasn't budging. Then Cage laughed at his fear, breath tickling Joss's ear, and Joss's panic subsided. He'd trained for this, and panicking wasn't going to get him out of this situation. Then, in a moment of desperation, Joss had his target. He lifted his knee as hard as he possibly could, slamming it into a place that no man wanted a knee slammed against. He had no idea if such a maneuver would even bother a vampire, but he had to try. And while Cage didn't whimper or cry out or crumble to the ground, he did weaken his grasp enough for Joss to wriggle free. Maybe it had hurt, or maybe he was just shocked that a Slayer had just kicked him in the balls in some stupid attempt to get free. It didn't matter to Joss. What mattered was that he had just evened the playing field a little bit more. "For you, Cecile!" He whipped his arm forward and the vampire caught it before he could make contact. Then Joss swung his other arm, the one holding the stake, with all his might. The silver tip plunged into Cage's chest, and the wood in Joss's hand drove the weapon home. Blood, rich, red, real, poured out over his hand. He pulled his arm back, freeing the stake. The sound it made as the wood slid from the creature's chest tore through Joss's ears, causing him to cringe a bit. It was something he'd never forget. Blood continued to pour out over his hands, spilling onto the floor. Cage's face was frozen in a state of shock. Joss looked from the open, gaping wound in Cage's chest to his eyes. "Where are your brothers, Cage? This has to end now." Cage coughed, sputtering some, a deep, gurgling sound escaping his lips. Joss pursed his lips, realizing he was too far gone to give any answers at all. Abraham would be furious. As the light left Cage's eyes and Cage fell back, Joss watched him, a strange sadness cloaking Joss's entire being. He'd taken a life. Granted, it had been the life of a monster, the life of a ruthless murderer, but it was still a life that was no longer moving along in the world, having been blinked out by Joss and his wooden stake. Sounds of the city at night echoed up around him, but all Joss could hear was the steady beating of his heart. It slowed a bit, calming, as he looked down at his prey. Inside he felt... No, that was the wrong word. He didn't feel. He simply was. He stared down at Cage's corpse for a while before crouching beside it, the bottoms of his sneakers turning red as blood pooled around them. He cleaned off his blood-covered stake and hands on a portion of Cage's shirt that was still white, and as he did, he looked back at Cage's face. The brief, curious question of whether or not vampires believed in an afterlife flitted through his mind. Then he stood and slipped the stake into the back of his belt. He probably should have said something, to the corpse, to himself, to the midnight air. But in the end, he moved silently to the door. But before he could reach it, voices found their way up the stairwell. Voices that probably belonged to security guards, to police, to people in uniforms that had the power to make his life very difficult very quickly. Glancing around, Joss rushed to the edge of the building. There was no fire escape, no stairs. Just as he was beginning to consider the repercussions of jumping two stories, he spied a large pipe running from the roof all the way down to the street below. With a deep breath, Joss flung his leg over the edge of the building's lip and lowered himself onto the pipe, gripping it as tightly as he was able to. As he dropped from sight, the stairwell voices became the rooftop voices. He shimmied downward as fast as he could, slipping once, but regaining his balance fairly quickly. The moment his feet hit the concrete, he bolted into a run. Outside the club's front doors were four cops.